Thank you for listening to this message from the North Peak.
So, man, since vacation, you know, everywhere we go on vacation, it's awesome because we go down with Pop, and then you have this screen deck and the Malibu Point, and it's just like and especially a 604. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Because half you go there like, throughout the year and end up the same suite. But sitting on that balcony has become a place of devotion for a lot of us. And the same thing in Ocean City when we go, it's actually Fenwick Island, Delaware. There's like this screen porch that overlooks a lagoon. And morning devotion time there is awesome. So I just get away from everyone, come out there, and it's nice and cool. And you have the view of the horizon and all these beach houses. And, man, the whole week of vacation, the Lord just spoke one thing to me. Pursue love and be jealous for the Spirit. And so I've been on this thing of like, I don't want the cultural context of love. I don't want to study romance, the cards and all that. That stuff's cool. I've heard that my entire life. I want to know the multidimensional love of God. I want to explore it and just kind of begin to, how does that affect me and this. And so I kind of been on that trajectory. And then, man, I read something from Bill Johnson in one of his chapters of one of his books. He mentions four pillars of Bethel or four cornerstones. And I'm not going to preach on that today, but one of them just really struck me a few weeks ago. That's really kind of taken me down this whole thing with love. And so he said, God is good. We've all heard that before, right? He said, our first cornerstone is God is good. The second one is nothing is impossible. The third one is Jesus paid for everything. Like, that's a pretty cool one too, right? The last one is every single person is significant. I don't know about you, but I've overlooked people a lot. I've overlooked my wife sometimes. I'm just being, you know what I'm saying? Forget your emotions, let's go. That's overlooking. That's not loving. You know what I'm saying? And it's not here pointing out, I'm not trying to do the trash can. I'm just showing you, there's different areas of our life where I've neglected the significance of someone else. I mean, how many times you almost ran over the homeless lady in town? And then you get mad because you didn't see her, right? She has significance. We come out of the meeting last night, and we see her down there, and he's like, she's going to get saved. She's going to get restored. I'm like, and we just like, Lord, restore her mind. Restore her to a home. Because there's something just that begins to brew inside you when you spend time with him. I don't know how you could spend time in his presence without him always bringing you back to this place. But every single person is significant. And it just struck me, man. I didn't have any answer. Like, Lord, what are you speaking? I get everyone's significant, right? But he starts really just hitting it, and he starts telling me, Mike, love is attitude. We know love is patient, love is kind. But he's like, love is attitude. And I'm like, man, it reminded me of this study I went back into. So I know attitude's one of those things we throw around all the time, right? But look how even the dictionary defines attitude. Check this out. It's a settled way of thinking or feeling about someone or something, typically one that is reflected in a person's behavior. A feeling or opinion. You know, we're getting feelings a lot in here, right? About something or someone or a way of behaving that is caused by this. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, Lord, what are you saying about attitude and love? And I started thinking about the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I'm not going to get, I was going to read the whole thing, but I don't think that's really necessary for you guys to get the point. Because I feel like God's kind of put some other stuff to kind of, you know, we'll go with that. But the parable, how many of you know talk about the parable of the Good Samaritan? Yeah. So like these guys are, Jesus talking about prophets from old have longed to hear what you guys are hearing now and seeing what you're seeing now. How many feel like that at the Northgate? What we're experiencing here, people have longed to talk about for years. And so that's the context of this conversation. And so out of all the stuff these guys are seeing, you know, the dead being resurrected, hunchback, people coming out, I mean, all this crazy stuff. They want to catch Jesus in some debate. Stupid, bad idea. The King of Kings, you're going to come and try to debate this dude. So they come to him and they start asking him about doctrine. And they bring up love your neighbor as yourself. And they do all this different stuff. And there's an exchange going on. And Jesus starts, he discerns this, right? And he starts telling a parable to kind of reveal what's in their heart. And he tells a story that this guy got robbed, beat, stripped down, was naked. And a Jewish priest walked by. And what'd he do? He walked right by. Why would he walk by when when we're just there and someone's there broken and you know they, it wasn't of their own, they're a victim of something, he literally just walked by and paid no attention. He had no value for that man. That man had no significance. That man could do nothing for him. In fact, he was a burden. So he went on by. Another man comes, right? A Levite. He comes in there, same exact thing. And then a Samaritan who, he's saying this because it's there's a racism issue back then. Jews hated Samaritans. And so he's talking, he uses two Jewish examples to get their attention of how they do wrong. And then he comes in with something that would have been offensive to him. But you know the Samaritan that you all hate? Guess what he did? He took the man, he bound him up, he put oil on all of his wounds, he put him up for the in the inn or hotel in modern day language, and said, if this guy has any other need, you give it to him when I come back my way through and I'll cover it all. Why did he do it to a total stranger? Because he had value in the individual one. The value, he had significance. And so a lot of our love issue is an attitude issue, and we have this attitude issue because of what we believe and what our opinions on what we think and we feel about it. You know what I'm saying? It's really hard to love Muslims when you think they're all terrorists. It's really hard to like African-Americans when you think they're all thugs. If your image of an African-American is what you saw in 90s gangster rap videos, you're wrong. Can you feel that? Come on. If you think the Mexican came, if you think the Mexican came to steal your job, how could you possibly love him? The man trying to provide, I'm not talking border issues, I'm talking the man in front of you that's in the country. I'm not talking about laws and right and wrong. I'm telling you, the man that's in the country trying to feed his kids, you can't be nice, you can't be kind, you can't love that man because you think he's taking money out of your pocket. That's a thought and a feeling that prevents you from love. Now, if you think someone's against you all the time, how can you love them? Come on, some parents, our kids feel like that because we put so much pressure on them. They actually begin to think, even though we do what I love, that we're putting so much pressure on them that they think that we can't stand it. Like they actually think we're against them because the way we're doing it, not our intention. So literally, this whole thing, if our thoughts and our opinions come, man, I got checked on this with politics. You've all heard me say this before. Literally, dude, I'm watching a shooting in Wisconsin and how someone pulled a gun out of there. And I start celebrating the fact that this dude killed other dudes. And I'm like, man, that dude deserved it. He freaking pulled a gun. He should have got shot. I'm not talking about the police case. I'm talking about the protester, whatever, the kid, the 7-year-old kid. And so I had these thoughts in my head, and I literally hear the Lord say, is that love? And I was like, dang it. Love hasn't always been my strong suit. All right? So I'm sitting there like, Lord, man, I've gotten so far away from this. You know what I'm saying? And he just starts, he's not like berating me. He's not yelling. You know what I mean? In his gentleness, he just comes. Isn't he significant too? I'm like, dang it. Even though he's acting like, I know he's acting like he's still significant. You heard Pop even hit on, kind of preach half my message there, even talked about Jonah. Jonah's issue, why he had to get swallowed up, because he hated the Ninevites. He hated the Ninevites so much, he's like, dude, I'd rather be disobedient to God and watch them all suffer, because I don't want them to repent. That's how racist he was, right? And so literally he goes through this whole entire process he has to go through, and it had nothing to do about the Ninevites. It was all about his heart, because the attitude, because his thoughts and opinions. Everything is of value. Come on, Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. I have a significance, just for an example, not to get in the political realm. I work in social services. I'm a conservative, right? Pro-life, all that stuff. I work with everybody completely opposite of that, except for like three or four of us. We find each other somehow. Just like Pastor said, gossips find the gossips. The conservatives found them in the world of progressive socialism at work. Amen? Somehow we find each other. But literally, in a political debate one time, my former boss and her and I had a great relationship. And where there was some kind of border issue with like Syrian refugees or something like this. And I just want to show you how this works, how easy this is to get caught up in stuff. And so somehow someone brought it up after me, and I'm like, dude, you don't want just, like, any terrorists to come through, do you? Like, have you seen all that stuff? Like, people are getting caught carrying, like, rocket propelled grenade or whatever the storyline is. And she's like, and so we both get ready to get fired up. We look at each other, and we like each other. So we're like, okay, let's take a deep breath. You know what I mean? We caught each other, but we have a relationship so we could sit, we could talk like that and be open. She said, but did you see the mom with the kids that had nowhere else to go because our government blew up their country? And I was like, dang, who's right? Was I right because I was more focused on security, or was she right because she was more focused on family? We're both right. And so what the media wants to do is separate us because we don't listen anymore. Because our attitude is, you're a flaming liberal. I have nothing to do. You make me sick. How could you support that guy? Or if you're on the other side, you're one of those, whatever, gay bashing, misogynist, homophobic, racist pigs, and you can't. I have nothing in common with you. I won't even listen to what you have to say. No. There's different perspectives, and that conversation actually changed my life because whenever I go to judge a situation, I don't want to look at that person and say, well, you're one of those crazy liberals. I'm not going to talk to you about politics. Right? There's actually an exchange, and something pricks my heart at that point because I never thought about the mom. I was so focused on security and safety, I never considered. Man, I couldn't imagine Jen being there with SJ on a border trying to get into Germany because the U.S. government and Russia just blew up our entire nation. I don't know what that's like. I never really thought about it because I don't have to deal with it. Come on, man. It's like I used to say growing up in Garrettsville, why would anyone ever join a gang? That's the dumbest thing in the world to me. And then BB shows up, right? Because we had gangs in Garrettsville, believe it or not, but they had no need for them. One red light town. They were just watching Snoop, okay? BB comes here, and we have these conversations, and he starts to tell me, man, it ain't like that. My mom didn't have groceries, and it was the Crips that brought groceries to my mom. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That was the only family they had. Now it would make sense. But if I sit there and have an opinion about gangbangers, guess what I do? I now handcuff my ability to love. Instead of actually listen and let an exchange come, okay, to me, it doesn't make sense in my world, and it doesn't. But in that world, it does make sense because someone's got to get the bread, man. And it makes sense of like, man, the church really should step up in those situations and be that support system, man. But we have to guard our hearts because if not, we step into the Eros love he's been talking about. We love one and hate the other. Come on, have you ever had that with your spouse? Be honest with yourself. Where you literally just, seriously, you literally like love them, but then you get so aggravated over something small, you literally begin to despise them and you become double-minded. I love you, but I hate you. Have you ever done that? I got real quiet in here. No one's doing the amen. Let me sow into that, sir. But you literally have to catch yourself, guard your heart, because through it, all the issues of life flow. Anyone. Dude, I've had coworkers talk about, find out I was a Republican because someone at the table was like, you know who you voted for? At a work meeting. We're all having a good time. They're like, you didn't. I was like, what? Had no idea what they're talking about. What? You voted for that dude? And I'm like, how did you find out? And I see the chick over there covering her face. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, yeah, I did. So what? You're the cause for all this? I'm like, you liked me 5 minutes ago. What just happened? I'm the same dude. Like, what the frick? Now it's like, I don't know about this guy. You know who he voted for. Now it's like, tell everyone how awesome I am. 5 minutes later, you're like warning everybody. I don't know, something about him that's off, you know? Everyone is significant. And where your heart is, where your treasure is, where your heart is, can't say this. They say King James backwards all the time. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So what are you treasuring? What are you valuing? Apostle said something, and Mom and Tina related a couple weeks ago. Saul built statues unto himself. Now he looks like a cocky son of a gun, doesn't he? But what does the prophet Samuel discern? He comes and says to him and says, you think so lowly of yourself? What? That looks arrogant. No, he's actually so lowly that he builds statues because he's trying to project out, because he has an opinion and feeling about himself And so when anyone comes to confront something with Saul, do you realize Saul was chosen by God? It was anointed by the prophet Samuel, just like David was. And literally when they went to announce to the nation who he was supposed to be, he literally hid in the equipment room, the Bible says. This is your big unveiling. Behold the king. Hey, where's the king? I don't know. Let's go look for him. He's hiding behind the armor. That guy. I think he had some insecurities inside, didn't he? And what I felt this morning, man, is we're never going to change the world if we're loaded and so bogged down with these insecurities. We're only going to change it when we carry the weight of assurance. Remember what Apostle said last December? We need to carry a weight. I'm not talking physical weight, but we need to carry a weight of assurance. Do you value yourself? Or do you sit there the whole time and think about, and you surround yourself with people that reaffirm how terrible you are? That takes even a good opinion of yourself, and you start to think less of yourself because you're listening to the mom or the mother-in-law, the sister, the brother, the crazy cousin. Trust me, I don't talk to most of my family because if I have an issue, I go to him. Him and Mama Tina say, hey, I'm dealing with this. What do you think? Because I know they love me, and they're going to tell me something I need to hear if it's hard. I go to my family and say, hey, sis, what do you think about this? It's like you might as well take a pack of hyenas and take a raw piece of meat and stand right in front of them. Because after they beat you and kill you and whip you, they're going to say, and another thing. You've always been like that. No, man. How many of you know what I'm talking about? But do you actually value yourself? I've been on this chiropractic prayer retreats. These short prayer retreats. Going to the chiropractor in Garrettsville, I just love the guy. He looks like Santa Claus, and he has this laugh. I just can't leave him. It's like a tall gnome kind of guy. And I was like, ah! I asked him a question to get info, and he does that laugh. So I don't know. It's kind of like Skeletor. He's evil, but it's good. I don't know. And so I go to the chiropractor, and, man, I just feel nudged. I just feel nudged to go, like, I keep thinking about this Eagle Creek Preserve. Some of you have heard this before. I just feel nudged to go out to this preserve that I used to drive by years ago when I delivered pizza. I think it's off Hopkins Road. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm in town. I'm on sick time. Let me go out and check this out. And so I leave the chiropractor, and I go out, and I just feel nudged. And, man, I get out of there. My back's hurting, and it's like a trail, and it's like mowed down, and it's like freaking 90,000 degrees because it was like July or so. I don't know when it was. And I get out of the car, and all these freaking deer flies start hitting me, and I'm like, Lord, this better be you, because these things are eating me up. And I'm just like whining unto the Lord, you know what I'm saying? So I'm walking through this thing, and I'm like, I should turn back, but I felt a little nudge. Keep going. And, man, that nudge went with me the whole way back. I went 10, 15 minutes back, and I found this seat. And it was real weird because it's like, have you ever been in a park trail kind of thing? Usually they have like regular benches, right? They're like low at the back. This thing was like high up, like a stool, but it was just a bench, like a picnic table bench. And it's like high up, and he's like here. And I sit down, there's a cutaway there, and I sit down, I'm going through the process in a few different areas. And I just sit down, I'm like, you know, that kind of thing. And literally I begin to hear a woman pray. I begin to hear a woman's voice on the inside of me. Father, whoever takes a seat, let the Spirit of the living God come over them. And literally this thing went on for like 2 minutes. I heard this woman pray for who took this seat. And I'm sitting there, man, I'm teared up in the middle of nowhere in the woods out in Garrettsville. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, Lord, what the heck? You love this woman so much. She was so valuable to her that you literally stored up her prayers. She could have prayed 10 years ago, three. I have no idea when this woman prayed. But literally had this knowing that I sat there and I sat literally in her prayers. And I was getting bathed in her prayers, going through some stuff personally. And this thing is like washing over me, man. And I'm telling you, the Lord just begins to speak to me. And I'm sitting there I start crying. I'm like, you honored her prayers so much. She was so precious to you personally, God. She was so valuable to you that you literally nudged me here all the way from Garrettsville, going back this goofy trail for 10, 15 minutes to find this seat just so you can honor her prayers. How many times have you prayed for a seat in this sanctuary or a family member? Do you think that thing's dead? So I stand up, man, and the Lord just tells me three things. I just hear three things. Unbroken fellowship, unadulterated devotion, and a life overflowing with love. And I stand up, and I'm like, dang, I want to live an unbroken fellowship. I want to live an unadulterated devotion, and I want a life overflowing with love. And I stood up, and I hear the Lord say, do you know why I had to bring you here? And I said, why, Lord? He's like, because I had to find one worthy. Listen, it's not an arrogant thing. Instantly, I thought of Jesus when he told his disciples. He says, go to a house and say, peace be with you. And if a son of truth doesn't rest there, your peace will come back to you. But if a son of truth is there, it'll rest and remain. So first off, he speaks into my identity that I'm actually worthy. And to me, if you'd have told me before that encounter, I'd have been like, I know I'm worthy. But there's something still here that wasn't surrendered or reconciled to the Lord. And he comes up. I brought you here to answer her prayer because I love her, but I brought you here to tell you that you're worthy to receive it. And it began to shift some things, man. And stuff that Papa's hitting last night. Every one of you are a seed. I was reminded, because the politics going on and the conventions that just happened, and this Friday morning prayer, Nika, do you remember? Dakota, you may have been there. I can't remember what day. But the Lord started talking that morning, John, about seeds. And I look over to John and Mary Ellen, and I'm like, I'm reminded, there's this seed. I didn't even realize the Jesus people thing on John. There's a seed of Portage County Revival where thousands will literally come, get healed, saved, set, delivered in Ravenna. I'm like, there's a seed in revival in you. And then literally I turned my head over. Mel Mel's right here. And all I could see is West Virginia. Like it's like she's in the middle of a snow globe. Like West Virginia revival is all around her. And Mel Mel got to experience literally kids praying at lunch. Literally handful of kids turned into an entire cafeteria full to stadiums. It was not denominational. In fact, the denomination killed it, but it really didn't die because in that girl right there, there's a seed of revival that remains. Man, our family has had revival. That's in your inheritance, Amanda, Justin. Our parents with his parents had revival 30, 40, 50 years ago before I was born. Would sing around these little churches, man, and have their little traveling groups, and things would break out. And then I'm going around, and I'm like, man, you have it. You have it. And then you turn around, I'm like, Curtis has it. His grandfather snuck out of the house against his parents' wishes to go to a revival meeting with Lester Sumrall. Curtis Biltz carries the revival of Lester Sumrall, who carries the revival of David Wilkerson, who carries the revival of Smith Wigglesworth. Do you have any idea what's in you, Curtis? Oh, man, I'm telling you, dude, it's not always a prophecy. Sometimes it's revealing of who you are and what's inside of you. Mel, Mel, we love them so much. Every time I pray for all I see is the entire state of West Virginia and that youth revival of kids raising their hands in wonder, and that was deposited in her. She didn't have to be the fire starter of it. She's carrying a deposit. So I believe there's hope for an entire state. Whether she ever lives there or not, there's something in her, inside her seed, that is an answer to that entire state, because God never finished it. Denomination killed it, but it's still alive in her womb. Never understood why I like to flow with music, and I can't sing. I tried here. I can't play a freaking instrument. My dad could, family, cousins, they all can, but me. Even her dad can, her sister, we can't. Her and I can't carry a tune with the lick. But there's something in our seed. And then we get a prophecy when Nietzsche texted me the testimony 3 or 4 years ago of Jason Upton. And I remember the morning I cried. I'm like, Lord, let this be an access point. Give me the next Jason Upton. And then he prophesies, we're going to have an adoption summit. And the first one we're going to pay for is Mike and Jen's baby. And then Apostle came. I don't know if we've ever talked about this. Man, I was wrestling with this a little bit, and I was going to stay down the whole time. We had our mind made up, but I was supposed to go to Apostle Aaron's for a week. Remember that? The church sent us down there, and then Apostle D comes. Why the heck is he coming now? Dang. Come next week or the week earlier, you know what I mean? And so we did the right thing. We honored it. We rebooked the flights, so we didn't leave until Apostle D. Do you know what he prophesied? I think it was the last night. In a flow, he's like, I feel awake, and he starts going to this whole thing. He's like, I feel the spirit of adoption come in. You know what he starts saying? Samuel's coming. Samuel's coming. And I'm like, babe, do you think that's us? Because we've had that name for 10 years. You think that's us? He just prays into it. And then just one thing. And then he gives me a word. And then I'm like, we don't even know the sex of a child. And I have some fear, concerns. And we go over his house after one service. And Bobby Lemley goes, the Lord gave me a word. And I was like, that's what I was dealing with in my heart. He's like, it's weird. And I'm like, go ahead. It's what I was struggling with in my heart. I won't get into all that because it's not the point. You got the seed of EJM in you. That's why you love Eddie so much. No matter the system, whatever. There's a seed of the purity of his grace inside you, BB. And so when BB comes in the room, that brings it. Katie Lynn has a piece. She was part of the Lovejoy Thompson revival. Her mom used to have revival with my parents or my grandparents. She was a little girl. There's a picture of me with all of them, and I'm like a little baby. There's seed. It began to go around, and Dale came up, because I really don't know Dale all that well. You know what I mean? Especially at that point. He comes up. He's like, Big Mike, I've seen some revivals. And he starts naming off these Arkansas revival I never heard. I'm like, dude, that's awesome. Adam, who's experienced revival in Streetsboro and different things, marry someone who has a seed of Southern revival we haven't even heard of. How does that intertwine with this? And they meet at the feet of, they connect through apostle, go there, come here. There's a seed of revival over their family. That's why they're all coming here. And we start going around like, Amanda, you have a revival in your loins. And your seed, you carry it. Don't matter what you feel like or what we're doing. It's in James. It's in Livy. It's in them. Now, they can choose whatever they want to. We're going to believe that's not going to happen because they're in this family. But I'm telling you, there's seeds in every one of you. And if you fail to see your significance because you don't make enough money, you're too fat, come on, you're too bald. Those are mine, right? Go whatever it is that you go through. Seriously, if you can't see value in other yourself, you're never going to see it in other people. And in that prayer meeting, I'm telling you, dude, we hit this pocket where literally, to me, it was like I got transported into a political convention. Nothing to do with politics. But did you ever watch a convention before COVID happened? Not the stupid ones they just had. They were like Zoom, Brady Bunch videos. But like the real ones where they're all in the arena and they would call up delegates. They would call delegates. And in my mind, I'm like experiencing this. And I look over at Mel and I hear, will the delegates of West Virginia please come to the podium? And I see Mel stand up with the seed inside of her saying, shh, Your Honor, the delegates of West Virginia choose mercy and awakening over America. Shh. I won't hit that thing because it's his, but I, you know what I'm saying? And then I'm like, will the delegates of Ravenna Assemblies of God and the Jesus People Movement please come to the podium? And John and Mary Ellen stand up on behalf of Ravenna Assembly or Revival from 20 years ago in the 90s, 30 years ago now, when I don't know, I'm old. And the Jesus People Movement. We say yes, revival and mercy over America. Well, BB come to the podium. On behalf of awakening through EJM and everything I've seen in the Philippines, everywhere I've ever been. We say mercy and awakening over America. Her dad used to preach in revival. Demons would begin to manifest when he's preaching. Didn't happen in the Church of God back those days. There's a seed of revival in her. Every single one of you are significant. Curtis, you may not have been to Lester Summerall's time. It doesn't matter. You got Smith's Wigglesworth flowing through your blood, bro. You have a legacy because one man said, yes, your grandparents, and your dad said, I'm going to steward this the best I know how. I'm going to teach them to do this, read a proverb a day. That's your legacy. Don't ever sell yourself short. You are viable to your family, yes, but to the kingdom. Now, you could choose to live any way you want to, or you could choose to embrace that. I tell you what, I've struggled long enough with insecurity on the inside of me of who I am. You know, the second guessing, and people are like, oh, you're this, you're cool, yeah. But something on in here is still, like, wounded. There's a fall line still there that just, I don't know. I get all fired up, and then Monday comes, I don't know. How am I ever going to be who I'm supposed to be until that fall line's dealt with? I'm not talking trash can. When am I actually, you know what disobedience is? When I did the word study in disobedience, how many of you remember this? It's literally keeping yourself from being fully convinced. Everything I've ever been taught is disobedience is task oriented. You either did it or you didn't. And literally the meaning of the word is you literally refuse to allow God to make you fully convinced in your heart. So Lord, I say remove every ounce of disobedience in me today. I have a seed of revival in me. And if I wasn't supposed to be in this city, you wouldn't have told me to come here. You wouldn't have told me to follow a man that has the same seed. Come on, is it coincidence we come out of the same denomination and our parents and grandparents used to travel together? Somehow something didn't get done. And I'm not knocking Roger's generation because I'm thankful for what they did have. But somehow what God wanted to do never got finished in that generation to where he had to put some grandkids in here, some sons and daughters, grandkids, and say, come on, Justin, that's your legacy too. I have not fulfilled what I wanted to do with the Thompsons and the Lovejoys and Blankenship. So you know what? I got to do this again with the great grandkids. I'm not about to screw that up again. Something he wanted to do in the 70s and 80s, he didn't get done. But you know what? Whether they did everything right, we're just the next baton to take and go, that's great. But I tell you what, I'm not going back to the way it was. This thing's been handed to us. We're going to hand it to our kids. I'm telling you, man, there's a seed in Trent. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. There's a seed in Sissy. Her sound just blows everything up. Come on, there's a seed in Alexis. Yeah. Come on, I never got to tell you. A couple weeks ago, I saw Jesus come to you. And I saw the spirit of worship. And I kept hearing worship, beauty, and holiness. And I was like, Lord, how are those things mixed together? And literally, I saw the Lord come and take a can of oil. And on the oil can, it said holiness. And he poured it over your head. And I heard, worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. And I'm telling you, Lexus, that's who you really are. There's value in you. And the whole time, I kept thinking of you on the flag line. I don't know if that's the picture that started the encounter. I'm like, why am I thinking of Lexus on the flag line? And he took me into that encounter. And I'm telling you, there's something of beauty that's revealed, and it has nothing to do with task and what you do. It's about who you are on the inside, girl. And I'm telling you, worship. You're a worshiper, and he'll release his fragrance through you through the beauty of holiness. That's who you are. You're holy. So, God, we just take off every shame and bit of guilt over Alexis this morning, God. We ask you to wipe away every tear that comes, every thought and reason and feeling that keeps her from thinking that she's holy before you, God. We ask that you wipe the slate queen, the clean today. The case is closed for her today. That you will worship him in the beauty of holiness and the beauty of Jesus. Well, from this point forward, Lexus, let it be something that spins off you like radiant light when you dance before him at home. Shh. I'm telling you, heaven, your whole life is a prophetic word. Not just saying it because your name's heaven. The Father said Friday to you, longs for to see heaven's dance in the earth again. Maybe you thought that was about dance team 5-6 years ago. That's one-on-one. And I'm telling you, I don't know why, because I see it in the story of John the Baptist and Herod I see and all that. I don't like that, but that's what I see. But it's Esther, because it's not actually in this story that Esther danced before the king. But I see this dance before the king. When I think of you dancing, heaven, you dance before the king. And it literally pleases the king. It's not because it's performance, it's because your heart in it. It has nothing to do with the moves. It's all to do with the passion and the romance. And he begins to stand up. That standing king begins to stand up. And he releases the scepter. Come on, when I think of king, I don't think of authority. Biblically speaking, when I watch Braveheart or something, yeah. But when I'm in intimacy and I say king, to me it's romance. I don't know why. Maybe it's backwards. But it's a romance with the king. And the standing king stands up and says, ask of me anything and I'll give you up to half my kingdom. Yeah. There's a seed of revival in you. You saw it at Faith Chapel. You carry that man's revival in you. Don't have to talk like him. You don't have to be warfare. You just carry a seed because you experienced it. When you experience it, you get anointed. You get deposited. You get impregnated with that thing that you begin to carry. Now, I don't know everyone's history in the room, but you do. I'm telling you, I've had grandmas pray for me. You heard the canned corn thing that helped get me out of New Age and into life. Just, dude, it's all over you. It's all over you. It's in this room. What does the North Gate look like when a revival from Indiana marries the revival in Streetsboro? When EGM and the whole prophetic words over BB marries what the Lovejoy prophetic word? Because that's what it is. If they get a word, it's our word. Because if he's going and we're following him, guess what we inherit? Some of you still haven't got that about Apostle D. You think the third great awakening he was prophesied about is just, oh, that's great for Damon. He's such a man of God. No, goofball, that's your freaking inheritance. You follow that man and honor his inheritance, and guess what happens? You receive an inheritance. You know why? We have tons of orphan generation. We have a whole orphan generation across America because they've been taught dishonor their whole life. They thought running your mouth and being dishonorable gets you. No, it doesn't. It causes more division. It causes you more conflict and stress. It causes you to hate people. You know what happens? When you begin to honor people for what they're good at and who they are, not their dysfunction, but who they are, guess what? You get the portion of that inheritance. I've had businessmen who are far from perfect come up to me in years past and say, what do you do? Where'd you go to school? And I'm like, it's none of your freaking business. I want to talk to you. I want to help you. Okay. I thought they're going to give me a job. Cosme wasn't going to give me a job. Told me how to do my job better. And something of poverty rose up inside of me. I was offended. Who the hell do you think you are? That was Mike in private, sorry. For some of you that are more saved than me. I thought you were going to get me a job, and you came here to tell me what to do? And then the Lord checked me on it. This is saved Mike, too, by the way. Checked me on it. Remember this, Jen? And I was like, wait a minute. He's right. I could get offended and do what I've been doing and stuck trying to get my career going all I want to, or I could listen to a man who started his own ad agency that was a believer and a strong leader to give me some advice to keep me from dealing with obstacles down the road. And I started to realize that moment in my poverty, I learned dishonor, couldn't honor what God put in front of me to show me a path. And so guess what I stayed in? A cycle of poverty. We have an orphan spirit across America because we're so full of dishonor. We can't honor what's right in people because we demand perfection, but we don't want anyone to demand that from us. And if I can honor the seed in Dakota of his assurance and eternal security, that dude gets his car stolen and comes over and plays cellar that night in my house. Dude, my car stolen, I'm going to get a baseball bat. Hey, pastor, you want to go to Indiana and find out who stole my car? Bring your AR-15. That's what I'm doing. If I can honor that seed in him and watch is him say that, and if I could take a part of that seed that's in him, not what he does wrong, but what he does right, and begin to do that, guess what I do? It starts to build my confidence. And if I get to tap into that seed of her passion and her compassion and her honor, then it begins to, man, that does something in me. And I hear Ed released the word of the Lord last night like a hammer. You set me free last night, Ed. Shh. Come on, because whenever you're free, but then you get more free. You get free indeed of like, man, there's some things I'm dealing with right now. And it's like, man, you just said, look at it. You're never going to see this again. I don't have to accept genetic disposition of my family. I don't have to accept dysfunction. All because God spoke through a man named Ed Heaver last night. And I received an inheritance because you had the courage to speak what you heard. Come on, man. I'm telling you. What happens when seeds begin to become fully mature? Come on, you look at a place where something's planted, you see nothing but a field. But if you see a forest, that's a place where someone came and planted something. And then over time, trees of righteousness begin to spring up and begin to multiply. I'm confident for America because of Ed Heaver and Mike Minichi. Come on, and Steve McTerrion and Melmo. There's pockets of some. We don't, man, it's not a duplicate thing. There's something in every one of us. There's something in every one of us. Come on, when Leah dropped the word last week, I was like, there's the revival in the Chamber family. Mingle with the Kales family revival. Coming up through there, you hear Josh and Jeremy pray in the spirit of weep. You say, man, I don't know how many times I've heard Jeremy pray, and I start to weep in the back, and I just hear that whimper, and I say, Lord, I want that. I want that. What do you value, Northgate? Do you value yourself? Do you value your spouse, your kids? One thing I think about this church, I'm so thankful for, man. When I was growing up in church, I think one of the reasons why I hated it so much is my mom had this big black purse. First time I took my He-Man guys and I hit him a little too hard, guess what she did? She gave me the fisheye. Do it again, finger snap. Third time, that big old black purse is going to hit me inside the head. I didn't want nothing to do with it. You know what kids were treated back then, though? Literally, you were an inconvenience. Sit down and shut up while we have church. We don't have that here, man. When I see people like Nietzsche and the Lizaders and the McCoons, and you take the kids back there and you start getting, and Katie Lynn and everyone else, you take activations, you start to tell a 4 and 5-year-old, you could hear God. You could hear God. You can hear God. Yes. Shh. And then you hear Trent prophesy. You hear him all. You hear the whole thing with Moose last week. Yep. And he begins to declare he's wealthy. Oh, I have hope for America because I see the Lizaders. Come on. I see the Yanishes. I see the Nietzsches. I see the Lovejoys, the Boyettes, the Chambers. I see everyone in this room. Just the seeds that you carried. And I see the kids here that are significant. We don't deal with that here. They're significant. I'm telling you, Northgate, they are significant. We see that. And because of that honor, they have the room to grow. Come on, man. But I'm telling you, I'm not waiting on the next generation. I'll be patient for them, but I'm going to take whatever, it's, like he says, if I got a walker. Listen, dude, I was at Tim Sheets. This dude looked like he was like should have been dead 30 years ago. His hair looked like it crystallized. He had those orthopedic boots. That son of a gun was up front. Looked like one of those Halloween skeletons dancing with someone pulling the strings. I'm not being me. I'm just telling you. This dude was old. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I look at him. We're there. Remember? We looked at that dude. And I'm like, I want to be that dude. I want to be that dude. I'm being funny about what I'm. But I'm telling you, there's something about legacy in this. And I'm telling you, I can't get off the seed thing. There's hope for America because Justin McCoon's in the room. There's legacy in Ted's family. He just prophesied. Again, don't let that slip down as a feel-good word, and then Monday you go back to, oh, because I've done that. Don't do that. You, son, you say, I have history. I have revival in my bones. I have honor and legacy in me. The enemy comes with his slick crap and tries to, well, you're not good at this. Shut up. I have legacy in my bones. I don't have music. Listen, I'm not a musician, but I have music in my bones. So you know what I do? We get a son a piano, a keyboard, a little guitar. He comes up to me and I look at him at the couch and I start playing like I'm playing drums, like I know what I'm doing. And guess what he does now? Everywhere he goes, he wakes, he'll jump on daddy, pull my shirt. Hey, I look at him, I'll smile, and start beating drums in daddy's belly. That's how I'm all right with that. Because I'm starting to see, even though he's not my flesh and blood, he's my flesh and blood. There's a seed in him that's beginning to awaken in music, and there's a passion to it. Come on, there's some things that he becomes alive when he begins to experience. And I see, man, that thing Nietzsche probably just thought, hey, I'm going to text Big Mike this because it's cool. No, it was a prophetic word of which I'm still hanging on. He's confirmed. Come on, do you see why we're family? You reminded me the other day when you did the Zoom call, the roots of the redwoods, they don't go very deep. But what they do is they get so intertwined, they go 50, 60 miles, was it? Out to the other. Listen, we can't do this on our own. You could have success on your own, but you're never going to have kingdom. You're never going to have peace until you learn how to honor each other and you begin to feed off what every joint and every marrow supplies. I'm telling you, there's revival in this house. And any time I've waned back, I love, there's just time for me. My biggest struggle probably is endurance. My biggest struggle is probably endurance, where I've heard revival for years and I believed it and sowed into it and prayed, did all night prayer, fasted, all that stuff. And then I'm still here and I haven't seen it to what I thought it was. So you know what I do? Oh, yeah, no, I believe in revival, brother. Yeah, heck yeah, revival, cool, yeah. Yeah. But I don't long for it anymore. Do you see what I'm saying? And then I come in and I hear this cat. You lost your hunger for revival. And I hear something inside of me awakens. That's why I follow this man. Because anytime I've been weary in the waiting, something in him throws fire at me. Ed threw fire at me last night. Tina threw fire at me today. Without ever trying to, just all I had to do was worship. All I had to do was stand here. All I had to do was stay. Fire, fire. Man, let's just stand to our feet. Stretch out your hands. God, I thank you that everything in me is valuable to you. I'm not a waste of investment. You'll get your return on investment because even when I feel like I can't stand, your grace empowers me to stand. Come on, say that over yourself. Carrie Turrentine, you're valuable to the kingdom. Amaris, you're valuable. Victoria, Josh, you're valuable to the kingdom. We may not know what that peace looks like all the time. It doesn't matter. The fact is, if you weren't supposed to be here, if you didn't have something to supply to the family, you wouldn't be here. That's love. So Yahweh, I thank you that every bit of our feelings, thoughts, and opinions that keep us from responding rightly to the people close to us and to the world around us, God, that you just come in with that gentle, loving kindness like you did me at Eagle Creek Preserve. I brought you here because you're worthy. God, that you come with your compassion and begin to brand beloved identity in everyone once and for all. I say finish it, God. There be no second guessing salvation. No second guess what you're called to. No second guessing anything. And if there's not clarity in what we're called, any of that kind of stuff that we wrestle with, listen, just have peace because he's got you and you're right where you need to be. Lord, I have hope for America. Every time I see Trent, and you can just see his mind going in his thoughts, and I hear sissy sound. I see T-Bone's and Buggy's smile. I see Amaris' dance. Come on, man. I see Tobias' smile. He's got that big cheese. When I see Tobias' big cheese, I light up. Come on. Lord, I thank you. Give us eyes to see all of the scripture and ears to hear. I want to hear the sound of significance around me. I want to see the sound of significance in my family and every single person here. And I thank you, God, you're taking us in greater dimensions of love and connection. Come on, some of us have been praying all week for connection to increase. Now I know why. We're experiencing it. So I thank you for connection that's increasing with you, Abba. That's connection with our families and spouses and one with another. God, and I thank you that there's no turning back in this love revolution, because there's no insecurity that's going to be a lid over our lives anymore that prevents us from allowing ourselves to be loved or from us loving someone else. So Northgate, I challenge you, the next time you see anything that offends you, begin to see the significance of the person that offended you.
Thank you for listening to this message from the Northgate. If you would like to donate to this ministry, please go to www.thenorthgateoh.com and click on the link at the bottom of the homepage.